Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1 with It's for Women. The car insurance with extra benefits like personal accident cover.
Well, when Lara Marlowe met Robert Fisk in 1983 in Damascus, he was already a famous war correspondent, while she was a young American reporter who would later become a renowned journalist in her own right. For the next number of years, they were lovers, husband and wife, and friends, occasionally angry and estranged from one another, but ultimately reconciled before his death in 2020. Now, journalist and writer Lara Marlowe recalls their time together in her book, Love in a Time of War. And Lara joins me now in studio. Morning, Lara.
Good morning, Miriam.
It's so honest. I'll go into that, but like, you didn't hold back. It's deeply honest. It's really rooted in this love you had for Robert and him for you. Take me back, will you? Where and when did you meet Robert for the first time?
We met in Damascus, Syria, in December of 1983. I'd been sent there by CBS News, by 60 Minutes program, to research a program on the role of Syria in the Middle East. And Robert was famous. I'd been reading him every day in the London Times for a year and a half or so. And I had, after a brief introduction in the coffee shop of the Sheraton Hotel, where we were both staying, he suggested I go to a press conference at the Ministry of Information. And it was standing in the minister's office on the top floor of this ugly sort of high-rise building in the suburbs of Damascus. Robert was there, and he was bouncing with energy and mischief, and he kept looking at me, you know, sideways glances, and I just there was something happened. There was a sort of coup de foudre, and that's actually how the first chapter of the book starts. As I fell in love with Robert in the office of the Minister of Information in Damascus.
And, you know, as you say, you quickly became involved romantically, but you say you were aware there were other women for him.
Yes, he had three girlfriends at the time. There was Christina, a Finnish airline hostess, and there was Majida, who was a Lebanese airline hostess because Robert lived on airplanes, and there was Scheherazade, who was a journalist. And as attractive as I found him, and as I was totally enamored of him, but I thought, oh, be careful, this one's going to break your heart. So I didn't take it too seriously at the time.
You eventually did leave your first husband for Robert. How difficult was that to do? And were you worried about doing that?
It was very difficult. I was very torn. And this really happened over a process of about 3 months. After I met Robert, we were in touch for 4 years, during which I married a very, very kind, gentle, wonderful Canadian fellow who was a young filmmaker. And then Robert just got it into his head that he was going to conquer me. He was going to live with me. And he mounted this incredible campaign, poems and letters. And he would have pigeons, he called them, you know, post his letters from all over the Middle East, from Beirut and Tehran and the Gulf and so on and so forth. And it just became... I think I call it Byronic voluntarism. It became just irresistible. And finally, I realized I have to do this or I'll miss out on life. So I left my first husband, who lived in Manhattan. And Robert said he would live with me in Paris. I thought Beirut was still was too dangerous. The war was still going on. So we set up house together in Paris for a year.
And in that early time of your relationship, what was it like? It was really happy, wasn't it?
It was very happy. Perhaps the happiest days of my life so far.
Yes.
It was blissful. He was writing Pity the Nation, which I believe is his best book about Lebanon. And I was proofreading the chapters as he wrote them. And he was sitting in front of, I converted him to the computer. He, until then, had written all his books on typewriters. And so I cooked for him and you know, sort of would pop in to stick my head in the office where he was working. And in the meantime, I was working on a book about Tom Bauer. And once we realized we were going to move back to Beirut, I looked for a flat, a pied-à-terre, where we could take refuge when things got too terrible in the Middle East. And I also started learning Arabic. So we're both very busy. But it was wonderful. I have very, very fond memories of that time.
You write that ultimately you suspect that Beirut was your greatest rival. What do you mean by that?
Well, Robert first went to Beirut when he was 26 years old. He went there from Belfast. And I think that everything that was really, really important to him had happened to him there. He covered the Israeli invasion in 1982, which was an earth-shattering event, an event of enormous proportions that really changed the Middle East and changed Lebanon and changed Israel, for that matter. And it was romantic and exciting, and all of his best friends were there. And he wrote Pity the Nation based on those experiences. He won so many press awards. I mean, when he died, he had more than 18 press awards, but many of them were from Lebanon. And he loved, he always said he was distrustful of foreigners who said they loved Beirut. He said they don't love Lebanon, they love the life they have there. And which sounds a bit odd when you're dodging kidnappers and under bombardment. But he loved the apartment overlooking the Mediterranean, sitting on the balcony and watching the sea, the excitement, the challenge. The Lebanese are extremely warm and welcoming people, a bit like the Irish, actually. Mm. And he loved the life that he had there, the restaurants, the familiarity of it. I realized later, actually, when I went to Washington in 2009 for the Irish Times, how important one's habits are. And Robert was a man of habits. And in the same way he loved Lebanon, he really loved Ireland. He was extremely attached to Ireland.
As well as knowing Fisk the man, you also, of course, knew him as the journalist. You say he'd so many positive qualities. But what were those qualities? Because you say they made him the ideal companion for someone like you inclined towards pessimism. And why were you so inclined towards pessimism?
Oh, I'd say it was our different childhoods. I mean, his mother was a very, very sunny, cheerful, wonderful woman. And my mother was a widow who'd had a very hard time, and she was very pessimistic. So to a large extent, it was that. Robert was, although it changed a bit in the 2000s after he's just under the weight of so much tragedy and so many horrible things we'd seen. But in those years, certainly in the 80s and the 90s, he was incredibly optimistic, and he always believed that things would turn out for the best, if not for the Middle East, certainly for us. And he just had incredible energy, and he was funny. He made jokes. He used to draw cartoons that he would leave on my desk that would just have me in stitches of laughter. But he had also great wisdom. I never knew anyone who sensed within seconds what something meant. For example, when he heard about Osama bin Laden in 1991, we met Jamal Khashoggi in Algiers, who, of course, you know, was murdered later by the Saudis. But Robert instantly realized how significant bin Laden would be, and nobody had ever heard of him then. When the Oslo Peace Accords happened, Robert said immediately, he said, this can't work. And he knew why it wouldn't work, because there was no justice for the Palestinians. When the Americans invaded Iraq, he said, this is going to be an utter disaster. This is going to destroy Iraq and give it to Iran. So he got things right, invariably, always. And I was really impressed with that.
Your book, it's primarily about your love story. You also write candidly, Lara, about an affair you had while you were with Robert. Why did you have the affair? Had your relationship waned? Did you want to hurt him? I mean, why?
I'm still asking myself why. It was a very stupid thing to do. We'd been living together for 5 years by then. We'd known each other for 9 years by then. I think, well, Robert, at the time, didn't want to get married. He didn't want to have children. I suspected that he was having an affair. I mean, I have all these sorts of excuses, but frankly, there is no excuse whatsoever. And I've always regretted it, and I still regret it. But life goes on.
But he himself, I mean, he found it very difficult. It's just fascinating, really, to forgive you for your affair. Yet he had an affair, didn't he? And eventually, he went on, you split up.
Yes, we did. I don't know if he had the affair that I suspected he was having in the early 90s or not. There were many indications that he might have, but the affair which eventually led to our breakup started at the end of the 1990s or in 2000, and he eventually married the young woman. You know, very few. I think it's perhaps in Ireland the divorce rate is lower, but in most of the West now, half of all marriages end in divorce. And I think you have to see that, sadly, that is a frequent occurrence, and that perhaps not all great love affairs are meant to last more than 20 years. I'm grateful for the years that we had together.
And you write so movingly about, you know, he eventually asked for a divorce to allow him to marry the Afghan-Canadian filmmaker Nolofar Pazira. Then they moved into the home you shared with Robert and Dorky.
Which we built together, yes.
So how difficult was that for you?
It was difficult. It was difficult, but one recovers.
When was the last time you saw him?
I saw him almost exactly a year before he died. By chance, we ran into each other in the baggage section of Dublin Airport. And it was, I mean, I didn't know when I saw him. I almost kind of slinked away without saying hello to him. And then I realized we'd been on the same flight. And we had a wonderful, very cheerful, happy, loving reunion. And I couldn't have known then that he would die a year later, but I am very, very grateful that we had that brief encounter and conversation at the airport.
You write of the day you had to call your old number in Dublin to speak to his wife. Why did you make that call?
Because I had a telephone call from the Irish Times on a Sunday night saying, did you know that Robert Fisk died? And I was absolutely stunned. I nearly fell off my chair. And I thought it was a bad joke or something. I couldn't believe it. And I had, in my sort of shock, I hadn't understood that he was actually dead. I thought there was some doubt about it. They said that they only had it from hospital sources. And I just instinctively picked up the phone, and that had been my telephone number for 20 years. Mm. And I remembered it by heart still. And I dialed the number, and she answered and confirmed that, yes, he had died at St. Vincent's Hospital of a stroke 2 days earlier.
You wrote recently that you realised you wouldn't be at peace until you wrote this book. You wrote that in the Irish Times. What did you mean by that, Lara?
Well, first of all, the book was not my idea. It was the idea of a book distributor in Dublin called Simon Hess and Neil Belton from Head of Zeus Publishers in London and Jonathan Williams, my agent. And they approached me after they read a piece I wrote in the Irish Times about Robert and about his brilliance as a journalist and said, would you like to do it? And so it wasn't my idea. But once I have the proposal from a publisher, it's a bit like getting a commission from an editor at the Irish Times. You can't help thinking about it constantly. And it was just in my head. And when I, under the lockdown, I got into the habit of doing long morning walks. And when I was going walking, that was all I could think about. And I found myself writing it in my head. And I realized that I had a lot to say about Robert and me and the experiences we shared, and that I really, really wanted to write the book. And I knew that if I didn't do it, I'd never forgive myself.
There's one line in the book, which it's from Robert, actually, in a letter to you. He says, it's as if the depth of love and experience of love over the years has a kind of ghastly counterbalance in pain and hurt. You also say, in your own words, Lara, no one ever loved me as much as Robert did. No one hurt me as much either. When you look back on it now, was he the great love of your life? And was the hurt overshone by the love at the end of the day?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Was he the great love of my life? I don't know. I'm 64 years old, but who knows what the future holds. Certainly, he was the great love of my life until now. I am incredibly, tremendously grateful to have had that experience. And I think very few people are ever as close to someone as I was to Robert and share the kind of experiences that we shared. And I'm just immensely grateful for that. And it took time to get over the heartbreak. But it's on balance, it's a very, very positive experience.
And it's an incredibly honest account of it all. It's a fascinating read. It is your book, Lara Marlowe, Love in a Time of War, and it's published by Jill Hess. Thank you so much for coming in this morning.